This is Metal Mike, and it's time to revisit a great year for rock and metal, 1993. Yeah, I know, grunge, alternative, whatever, blah, blah, blah. There still was some great metal from this year, some of my favorite albums of all time. I'm joined by my buddy Ryan, and we talk through it all. Check it out.
Ryan, welcome to the 80s Glam Metal Cast. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back again.
No problem, man. Well, you know, I thought I was going to give you a little rest, you know, but then I started looking around and I was looking at 1993 and I was shocked how good of a year it was of music. And I was like, we got to tell the world about this, man. We got to get to do another list.
Agreed, man. Like every time we talk about it, it's these albums and these years that come out, you don't realize they all came out in the same year. And hell, this is another one. This is fantastic. I love this year.
Yeah, and you know, it's weird because I thought 92 was so good. You know, I was like, ah, there's no way that 93 is as good as 92. I don't know, man. It might be better.
Yeah, I think things tend to your way a little bit here because you started getting into a little bit harder stuff around this time.
Yeah.
Where I'm still just completely sold out into the bubblegum pop. So you'll see a lot of that from me, but not all of it. You'll be maybe some surprises, but I'm still pretty hooked.
All right. Well, hey, man, I say we just jump into it. Let's hear what you got for 10.
All right. Well, this is definitely not bubblegum pop. This is, like I said, one of the surprises. But what I'll say right now is number 10. Let me see your hands in the air. Is one of your big guys here, Sabotage, Edge of Thorns.
Ooh, nice. Yes.
I know it. So I really, you know, obviously you and I talk about Sabotage a lot. I think you take the cake on being a bigger fan of Sabotage than I am, but I really like them. I obviously have other albums, and this one, yeah, I gotta say, I don't know how I ever overlooked the song Miles Away. This is one of those just hidden gems on that album. And when I went back and I was doing a little research on this, I was like, damn, this is like a perfect song for me. You know, it's got a little bit of everything,
yeah.
But I can't believe I overlooked it. So, you know, I got songs like that, another one called Lights Out that I know you know. But then obviously the title track, this is one of those where the hit still resonates and the hit's
yeah.
Still one of those hits that you could really listen to a lot and go, damn, this never gets old. So, you know, Zach's range is amazing. You know, there's not much I could say about this band and this album that you don't know. I know you've spoken to a lot of the members and the story's there for you. But I think Zach Stevens fits in perfectly. I think he's got a fantastic voice, a great range, and that's exactly what this band needed at the time.
Yep.
I know it was like an amicable breakup, if you will, or a separation, but it was, you know, this fit well. This is a singer change that went well for once.
Well, a couple points. First of all, this is definitely on my list. I wrote a book about it, so I won't say much about it right now, but I got a whole book about this this album. But anyways, one thing I will say about it, though, yeah, you're right. I have talked to like probably half the people that were in the band that played on this album. But besides that, I think if I think back, when I read that John Oliva was not going to be the singer of Sabotage anymore. You know what I mean? I was like, what? I mean, no. Because singer changes, let's face it, they rarely work out that well. You know what I mean? There's only a few documented times where it's really worked out well. A lot of the other times, you know, the guy stays in for an album or two, he's gone, and then the other guy comes back. So this one was
one of those ones
where I was like, no, man, John Oliva, he writes all the songs. He, you know, he's the voice of Sabotage. He's got such a unique voice. And then you bring in somebody else that was cool because he didn't sound anything like him. They did that on purpose. You know, they didn't want – you know, they got a lot of those people sending in demos that wanted to be John Oliva Part 2. They didn't want that. You know what I mean? They wanted somebody that sounded different. And it wasn't like these songs were written for John Oliva's voice. They were written for Zach Stevens' voice. So that's why it fits so well. It's not like you got this guy who's a little bit different trying to sing songs that were written for the other guy, you know, and then the guy bailed, so now we got to replace the vocals. It wasn't like that. Sabotage is a different kind of a beast. You know, I'll get more into that when I talk about this album. But this album, like you said, there's no hard feelings. John Oliva wrote all the songs along with Chris Oliva and Paul O'Neill. So the core team of writers from the albums prior is still there. It's just you got a couple, you got a different player on the, you know, for the vocals. But the rest of it, it's all the same guys, same writers. It's just, it's a little bit of a change. And you know what, man, you're right. Edge of Thorns was like a minor hit for these guys. So how they pulled that out of their ass in 1993, I don't know. But we had a couple cool rock radio stations out this way back in the day, and this song got played a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the reason why the albums from the early 90s for Sabotage and Me, or and I don't get along all that well, is because I'm not the hugest on piano-driven hard rock. And I know, like, you're a big Queen fan, and obviously a huge Sabotage fan. But I think that kind of aces me out a little bit because, yeah, the piano-driven stuff just doesn't exactly do it for me. And they do lace it a lot on this album, but it works.
Yes.
And, but I think it's not higher for me for that reason, but I still really enjoy it. And it goes to show the talent of this band, obviously. I mean, look what they turned into.
Yeah.
So, you know, major arena selling band at this point. So, anyway, that's my number 10. I figured I'd kick it off with a giant like that.
Cool. I'm totally thumbs up. Support that album a lot. And for my number 10... I talked about this a little bit in another podcast. I think it was when Metallica came out, 91, when we not when Metallica came out, but when the Black Album came out, when we did that podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
We talked about
that. Most of the world found out about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's what most of everybody else figured out who Metallica was. But it was a game changer. And we talked about all the bands that came out after them that were like, you know, that were like them, contemporaries like Testament and Overkill and Anthrax. They all kind of tried their hand at making a little bit of a scaled down album after. And I think that's what happened with Overkill with I Hear Black. It's definitely scaled back. It probably integrates, you know, I've read that they, people call it like groove metal, maybe some of the Sabbath influences coming through. You could also attribute that to grunge. You know, I think there's some grunge elements in here. It's not a grunge album, but, you know, it fits more in that world than maybe the high-speed thrash they were doing on Horoscope. But I love it, man. I love the title track, World of Hurt, Spiritual Void. And there's just one song. I don't think you've ever heard this. Maybe you have, but go check out the song Ignorance and Innocence. It's got the coolest chorus. It totally sounds like it could just be like, you know, like hair metal, but like heavy. I don't know. It's just real catchy. And I feel like, you know, with all these bands, you know, they kicked up their game with melodic metal. You know what I mean? They were a lot more melodic, a lot more catchier. And, you know, they were trying to be a little bit more accessible. Whether that was by their own choice or, you know, like Atlantic Records told them, that's what you guys need to do. But I love I Hear Black. I can listen to that whole thing all the way through. It's a cool album. And they added an extra guitar player. I think they lost the guitar player that was on Horoscope, and then they added two guys. I might be wrong on that, but I know they added an additional guitarist around. Actually, no, I think I'm completely wrong. I think they added the additional guitarist to the album before this. So, all right, I'm just going to stop now.
All right, no worries. Yeah, I think I own everything up to this.
Oh, okay.
Because I have, yeah, I got Under the Influence and what's it? Oh, the Years of Decay.
Years of Decay.
And Horoscope.
Yeah.
I don't think I have I Hear Black, so I'll have to check that. Especially you said Ignorance and Innocence is one to check out, huh?
You love it. You're going to love that song.
All right, killer. Yeah, I'll check that out. I look forward to that because sometimes, like I said, I like to turn it up a little bit and play that kind of stuff. You know, like about as hard as it gets for me sometimes is Racer X. So maybe this will be the trick.
And the last tidbit is that per Wikipedia, not my own knowledge, they say that this is still Overkill's most successful selling album. So the change did help them a little bit. Once again, they weren't quadruple platinum level or anything, but this album is the highest selling in their catalog. So,
all right, killer.
Number nine.
I can't wait to right, number nine. I got a band called Crown of Thorns. You ever heard of them?
Mm-mm. No, let's hear about these guys. Never heard of them.
Okay. Yeah, it's a self-titled album, Crown of Thorns. Got a guy named Jean Beauvoir, I think is how you pronounce it. But he was the singer, guitar player.
Uh-huh.
You might recognize his name because
Kiss.
He wrote on Kiss Asylum.
Yep, yep.
So he's got he's this dude, looks killer. He's got this big old bleach blonde, outrageous mohawk mullet. It's killer, dude. You
I think he still
it.
Has
it. Look him up.
I think that's his claim to fame. I think he still has it.
That is it. That's got to be his trademark. Yeah, he does still have it. But he was in a really cool band called Voodoo X. It's a ripper from '89. He's got some solo stuff out there too, but it's a lot more '80s pop sounding than anything like hard rock. But yeah, so he did the Kiss thing. He was a songwriter. I believe he owns record label now. But this album is laced with the real catchy melodic tunes. It's kind of getting '90s-ish slash like Living Color funkish, but it stays very melodic hard rock. You probably either recognize or you'll gravitate towards a song called Dying for Love.
Hmm.
I don't remember where I first heard it, but it wasn't on this album. It was like on a soundtrack or something. It's kind of a bigger song than just on this album. But yeah, Dying for Love, Secret Jesus, House of Love, and Hike It Up. There's a lot of, it's just basically tongue-in-cheek hard rock, laced with kind of bigger choruses, bigger catchy stuff. So I dig it. I think it's a freaking cool album. The album cover is very early 90s-ish. I think that's about as sellout 90s as they got, because the rest of it's about as 80s as it gets, which I like, obviously. So, check it out.
No, I never heard of that. And, you know, I guess the sad part of what you're talking about here is that this is what happened to a lot of bands is you know, if you weren't a heavy hitter at this point, you kind of got lost in the shuffle. You know, I mean, this was a great album that probably would have done well a couple years prior, but now it's like, forget about it. If you're coming in with the kind of the 80s melodic sound, you got no chance. You know what I mean?
I know it. And like I said, I can't remember what success or where else the song Dying for Love I heard it on, but yeah, I don't know where it was, but like I said, I think it was more than just discovering the album and being like, that's a cool song. It was like, I heard it somewhere else first, and then I went back to the album. So I'll figure that one out, but you might like it. I think it might fit your taste these days.
Cool. I will definitely check it out, man. My number nine. You know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, why hasn't this band ever hit a list before? And they've been omitted from lists that I've done in the past. Not that I didn't like their albums, but they weren't top 10 worthy. But now with this one, I got Saigon Kick Water at number 9, I love this album. A lot of interesting things are happening. The band becomes a 3-piece. Singer Matt Kramer's out, and Jason, I think you say it Beeler. I never heard anybody say his name, because for a while I think he was just Jason.
Yeah.
I think he was Jason. At some point he just was Jason, then he was Jason Beeler. But he does lead vocals on this, and really, you know, he was big vocally on the other albums, because there were so many harmonies on the other two albums that it's not like his voice is completely foreign. I think he was writing most of the songs on those albums too. So to me, this doesn't sound like a drastic change. You know, if you were really into their other albums, I don't know why you couldn't listen to this and still enjoy it. My buddy Chris McLernan is on bass from Cold Sweat, so he got into Saigon Kick at this point. And dude, this album reminds me. So this is where you might not be on board with this, but this is a lot like a Beatles or Queen album, because it's all over the board. You know what I mean? You got funky stuff, you got trippy stuff, metal, electronic. You know what I mean? It is all over the board, and I like that kind of stuff. I actually do enjoy when an album goes in all different kinds of weird directions, and it's just, especially the song On and On, it's like a real, it's just like an acoustic funky song. And Sentimental Girl, that's where they're kind of integrating like that 40s or 20s, or, you know, that ragtime guitar. So, you know, he's definitely got some big time Beatles and Queen stuff going on. Sergeant Steve, One Step Closer is a hard rocker. That's a good song. There's a song called I Love You, and it's pretty touching. But anyways, lyrics, the lyrics are cool, man. There's a lot of sarcasm in there. And they cover David Bowie's Space Oddity, and I don't know, it's okay, but that never really stood out that much to me. But the rest of the songs are great. It is my favorite album by them. So Devil in the Details after this is pretty good too. But I think for me, this is my favorite album by them. And a lot of people will be like, "No, man, the lizard." But I'm sorry, I like this better.
Well, that's I only have the first two. I don't even know this album, dude. I might have it just because I saw it and I was like, "Oh, I'll complete the collection." But I've never even heard it. So maybe this is one of those another homework assignment I got to check out.
You should just check it out just so you know of its existence. because a lot of people don't. It was a big drop off. You know what I mean? They were one of the ones where, honestly, maybe a name change would have helped, because this album could have flown right under the radar. It could have been like an alternative album. You know what I mean? That's the kind of the way that it is. But because they're called Saigon Kick, they got grouped into, the hair metal thing, and nobody gave it a chance. But yeah, so definitely some really awesome tunes, a lot of growth, very experimental. It's definitely weird, but I enjoy it. So I'm weird, so it's all good.
Well, I remember hearing the knock a lot on the Lizard, because everybody pigeonholed him as hairband with Love Is On The Way.
Right.
And they hated that. They hated it. They didn't want to be labeled that at all. And that album isn't. That's very much like more cultish, like hard rock, kind of out there stuff. Than your typical hair band, if you will. So I like that. Like, feel the same way. And all those songs. Yeah. They still have big, catchy choruses. Yeah. I really dig it. That's why I'm into that album. But I remember those guys really not digging the fact that they're getting lumped into to the rest of them.
Yeah. You know, one thing I got to throw out there right now, and this album is an example of it, and there's going to be some other examples as we get going. What we were getting, and we got this in 92 as well, like with Dog Eat Dog, but these are the evolution albums, right? So these, we're watching the bands grow, but they're growing with their talent and with their experimentation and all that stuff and heaviness, but commercially they're dying. You know what I mean? And you're going to see that. I got a few of them like that. You know what I mean? This is definitely a leftover, like, kind of a situation from 92. You got a lot of growth, but man, not commercial growth, not at all.
Yep, totally, good point.
Number 8.
All right, number 8. I gotta put another one of these in. I'm putting a live album in. I'm sorry. I'm going Van Halen live right here, right now. I have to do it.
You will find any opportunity to put Sammy Hagar on a freaking list. So, all right. What's so great about this album? I want to hear it.
Oh, dude. I think they've made every list. So, so the album and tour. Huge album.
Yeah,
my favorite Sammy era album. They're supporting with Full and Lawful Carnal Knowledge. Huge tour. Started off just double dates everywhere. Great opening bands. They started off in the height of hard rock in 91. Just the hard rock perfection in that era. And then they ended in that shit-ass grunge era in 93, and they released this album.
Uh-huh.
So, but they had, they had Alice in Chains opening, Hardline, and the Vince Neil band. So, pretty cool little diversity of opening bands. So that's nice. But great set list, huge production, huge album, double CD, killer home video. And they played my favorite Sammy era song in Cabo Wabo live on this album. So, other than that, this is the last time the band is actually happy. They started to really go downhill during the Balance recording and then the subsequent tour. But it's just good to see them clicking on stage and playing to huge audiences. Not that they didn't after this, but really, really big audiences that were still oriented from the 80s-ish Van Halen. So anyway, I this is like one of the earlier Van Halen videos I owned, so I got to see them live a lot and study what they do on stage. So anyway, I love this album. They pull out some surprises, and it was just so big, and they had such a big opening acts and everything too. So I had to put it in there.
Cool, man. I mean, I'm getting used to this kind of stuff, so I'm not surprised.
I know. Don't worry. That's the last time. The rest of it will be
until we do the 1995 episode, and then we got Balance comes out.
Exactly.
Number one album of 1995, Balance.
Perfect.
Okay, so number eight. We talk about people evolving and changing, and I don't think it gets any more of an evolution here than Fight, man. War of Words with Rob Halford. I mean, Rob must have kind of known, man. He had his finger on the pulse that, like, Judas Priest ain't going to fit in with this new era. At least maybe that's what he was thinking. Or he just wanted to take a detour. I don't really know what was going on there, but he brought Scott Travis with him, and, man, it's a killer album. And what's funny is I feel like I think the Halford Resurrection and this are two of his coolest albums. You know what I mean? Not to take away from the Priest stuff, but I love both of these. And it's just song after song. I mean, maybe as you get to the end, it might peter out a little bit. But Into the Pit, Life in Black, Nailed to the Gun, Immortal Sin. I mean, I can just listen to these songs all day, you know what I mean? And it was cool because he had, like, these kind of younger dudes in the band doing the gang vocals, and he was kind of taking care of all the high stuff, you know, and he was a little bit more raspier. I'll never forget watching MTV. They actually played in the MTV studio. Once again, kind of strange because the time had kind of passed for these kind of people, but MTV gave him a shot, and I just remember, you know, he's wearing shorts, and he's wearing a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. People got flannels tied around their waist, you know. It definitely was not the turbo days anymore. You know what I mean? Things had changed.
Yeah, no.
And if anybody doesn't know this, it took a while for me to discover this, but I did know it, that Russ Parrish on guitar is in Steel Panther. What's his name in Steel Panther? What's he, Satchel or some shit? What's his name in Steel Panther?
Oh, really? Yeah, that's him. I didn't know he was in that band.
Yeah. Yep. So he was in Fight. I think that was the first pro gig that he ever did. But, that's what, wow. I got, man. Fight. That's a cool album.
Dude, I dig it. I've had it for years. I like the album cover. I like the thing. It's hard as shit. My guitar player, my buddy Todd, he was at a Fight show when this album came out, and they did not play a single Judas Priest song. It was all Fight the entire time. And people were tripping. They thought that they'd at least play a couple, maybe even an encore. Not a one.
Wow.
So he was pretty dedicated to this at that time.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah.
Crazy.
But I dig it. Good album.
Yeah.
Hard shit. Way different than Priest.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you got to give Halford credit. You know what I mean? Well, maybe you don't have to give him credit, because in a lot of ways, you can look at it two ways, okay? You could look at it like, you know, he experimented and he tried some different things. You got to give him credit for that. Or you could look at him as like he's kind of like a poser or something, that he jumped on bandwagons to try to stay successful. You know what I mean? He did this at the prime time of Alice in Chains and Pantera. You know, he was on the right track of what was in. But then he turned around and he did two with Trent Reznor. You know what I mean? So it's like, I guess you could, I don't know. I don't look at him like as a poser. I just look at him with somebody who kind of is open to different styles of music. And not everybody is when it comes to metal. Some of our metal buddies are very close. Sometimes I'm kind of close-minded. So I give him credit for trying some different stuff.
Yeah, I don't see him as a poser at all. That guy pretty much sets the trends. And I think everybody was probably in awe of what he was doing at all times.
Yeah.
So I totally agree there.
Yep. What do you got for seven?
All right, seven. Okay, so I got a guy named Jeff Paris. Not sure if you heard of Jeff Paris, but this is an album called Lucky This Time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so Jeff Paris, he's a killer songwriter. He started in the mid-80s. He did, you know that song Gotta Let Go by Lita Ford?
I don't think I know that one. What album is it on?
It's on the 84. I can't remember what it's called. But the single with Gotta Let Go, it's killer, dude. It's definitely my favorite Lita Ford song, and it's a ripper. Great chorus. he worked with YMT at this time as well. They brought him in, record company brought him in to try to pump up YMT a little bit. And, you know, the boys in YMT were super bummed, but got along great, and they just needed that outside writer. But he also worked on Night Songs back in 86. So he's been around a lot. He's done some stuff with Vixen, Mr. Big. So, but this album kicks off with this epic, epic melodic rock ripper called Lucky This Time, which is also the title of the album. Basically, if he'd have just put this song out and farted in the microphone for the rest of the album, this still would have made my top 10. That's how killer this song is, dude. So it was recorded by Mr. Big on their Lean Into It album, but and the versions are pretty much identical. There's some like timing differences, but this is the standout song for me on Lean Into It by Mr. Big, and this is definitely a standout song. It's like I said, the title track, first song on the album, but this is, he's basically, after like kind of researching this again, I realized that this is soundtrack music. Like, this is, like, no wonder he's a songwriter. This, every song could be on a soundtrack of like a hard rock soundtrack, but like with that little bit of pop touch, every song has hit potential, really. So, if you check it out, you know, gravitate towards Lucky This Time, Wrong Side of Love, House on Fire, Touched by Love is like this very, very mid-tempo hard rocker, Stop Playing With My Heart and Baby Break Mine. It's just every song you just go, okay, that's a hit. It's like remember when we did the 91, I was talking about Kane Roberts.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I remember you saying like every song kind of sounded the same, if you will, just big catchy huge choruses. That's how this album is, so I fall for it every time, you know. But
it gets you every time.
It's great. I got it. I fall for it every time. They knew how to hook me, and they hooked me, and they didn't catch and release, man. This one still got me. So, but this guy, he's consistent. He's got, I think his first album was 86, 88, and then this one. But he was busy, you know. He was writing. He was more so a songwriter. His voice is good, but it's not incredibly strong. It's he's got a good voice, obviously. But it's not huge, huge strong. But he was a hell of a songwriter. He wrote for a lot of other bands. So I highly suggest checking out Jeff Paris, Lucky This Time.
I remember that you put Jeff Paris on the 86 list, didn't you?
I don't know if I did, actually.
Well, this came up with somebody, because whatever album he did where the songs ended up on the Vixen album. So somebody talked about this album. I remember this.
Well, oh,
yeah. So
okay.
Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was somebody else. Sorry, I don't mean to like bring up other people during the podcast.
But I mean,
this came up. I just remember this. Somebody said he did an album in the 80s, and then Vixen they re-recorded some of his songs. So I've heard of Jeff Paris before on here. So
yeah, he's got kind of songs laced everywhere, and he's true to form. I did hear an interview with him in the last couple of years, and he, you know, I think they asked him, like, what's the best song you've ever written? And it was a very 80s catchy song off of his 86 album, Wired Up. And I was like, damn, good. Like, I'm glad he wasn't embarrassed or, like, you know, thinking about that being too 80s sounding. Like, he's still very proud of his stuff. So
nice.
It probably earned him a hell of a living at that point, too. So good on him.
Yep. So number 7, man. Going Scorpions, Face the Heat. And
attaboy.
This is, you know, I'll be honest, when I first heard Alien Nation, I was like, wow, here we go. And once again, like we said, everybody's getting heavy, man. 92 93, Kiss, you know, Ozzy, Scorps, everybody's kind of kicking it up a little bit. But I gotta admit, once I got this one kind of took a while to really sink in. But I always loved Alien Nation. No Pain No Gain kicks major ass. I like the song Ship of Fools. That's a more of a deeper track. And of course, even though for a while I kind of hated this song, but now I like it, is Under the Same Sun. Because I'm like, these bastards, they want to write When to Change Part 2 and, you know, try their luck at another one of these, you know, kumbaya ballad type songs. But it's actually, now I do really like this. I do really like Under the Same Sun. It's pretty catchy. And I think this album is Francis Butchoff's is out. and like Ralph Rickenbacker or somebody is on base. So
there's that
constant 80s lineup gets shaken up at this point. And I think shortly after this, I think Herman Rarebell is out too on drums. So, and that's when James Kotak comes in. But yeah, man, I dig it. I mean, once again, anytime a band that I love kind of updates their sound and the production gets a little heavier, I'm always down.
Totally. No comment on this album.
Yes. I figured. I was going to say, this has got to be. This has to be on your list. I know you love this album.
It's there.
So let's go to six.
All right. Number six, I got Winger Pole.
Ah, nice.
So, I know you might have no comment. I know we'll see, but I know I like to kind of talk about the bands with the big three. You know, they're the big three albums in their heyday. You got Warrant, you got White Lion, you got Europe, you got Danger Danger, you got House of Lords. These bands that came out with the big three albums that came out anywhere from like, you know, mid '80s to early '90s, and then after that you're like, come on. But this is the last of the big three for Winger, in my opinion. But they pulled it off very nicely, getting that little harder and more raw image and sound in their music and appearance. So they had that great sound. These tunes go over really well live. I saw them in 2014, and they played a few of these songs live. And, dude, I will tell you that the audience reaction to these songs are almost as great as the the big hits, the Easy Come, Easy Goes, and the 17s, etc. But I kind of want to admit that the consistency of the Winger albums is always amazing, obviously.
Yeah.
But this one is like so consistent. And in doing a little bit more research on this, I'm going, damn, like, is this the most consistent? I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
But they got so many tracks. You got Junkyard Dog, Blind Revolution Magic, Down Incognito, which I believe was the only single.
Yep.
And then some of the kind of deeper ones was The Lucky One and No Man's Land. So basically, if an 80s band as killer and catchy and hooky as Winger's first two want to get a little raw and harder, this is when they nailed it, you know? So it's just like a dog eat dog. A dog eat dog just got harder and more electric and bigger and killer, like we talked about. This album was it's a little bit more laced with some like electrified acoustic, if you will.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, Reb is it shows with the direction that each band member is kind of gonna be going in, and that is a lot deeper than your Little Dirty Blonde or your Hanging On or something like that. That's the shit that I love, obviously, from the first two. But look at Kip now. He's a composer. Look at Reb now. He's one of the most sought-after session guitarists / live guitarists / please be in my band. So they just nailed it on this album. So anyway, I think that they pulled it off very nicely in 93.
Yeah. Sometimes he's known as C.F. Kip Winger when he's a maestro, you know what I mean, when he does his orchestra stuff. So
exactly.
But I strangely enough, I have Winger at number 6 as well. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, I love this album. Now here's what's weird. I don't think this was a single, but like I said, there was a tiny window where we had a really cool radio station around here, and I remember hearing Blind Revolution Mad on the radio. So I don't know if somebody just sent them the Winger CD and they just played it, you know, like a song, but that I remember hearing that. I was just like, this is killer, man. It's heavy. It's so catchy. And then I remember, I think you had to stay up till like 4 in the morning. Just on a Wednesday night to catch Down Incognito on MTV. I think I did see it one time.
Yeah.
But that is a great single. My wife, I gotta mention, she loves Winger and she loves that song. So I gotta give a shout out to my wife, Lori. Anyways, but yeah.
Good.
Spell I'm Under, Junkyard Dog, In My Veins. I mean, you mentioned, you know, all the same ones that I love, and it's a great a great album, man. Once again, that was one of those ones. You know, like you said, They started off with kind of like almost like a typical sound that came out maybe in the mid '80s, and they just kept growing and growing, and then they got to this, And like we said before in some of the other episodes, like if this was a major album, man, what I would have loved to see in the next one. And then one thing I got to mention is there was like this, also in my area, there was like this sleazeball promoter. And he was going to bring Winger to right around where I live, you know? And I was like, oh, geez. I mean, if they're going to be local, I got to go see Winger, you know? And I remember you had to prepay for tickets. I bought a ticket. And then the whole thing fell through. And you could write in, supposedly, to get your money back. But I never got my money back. So, Winger, I don't blame you. It was just a sleazeball promoter. So, I'm still waiting for my refund for my pool tour. I was probably going to be, like, in a pool hall or something. Because, you know, it was just, there was no audience anymore for this kind of stuff. But the album kicks ass. It's great. I love it.
You know what? A couple things to add about this one. Down Incognito. I think one of the reasons why it's such an audience favorite now is because you can sing along to it. Yeah. Pretty much every bit of that song, from what I recall, being in the audience, the whole audience was singing the very spaced out verse,
yep,
the very spaced out pre-chorus and the chorus, and it's not too high, and you can't just, you know, it's really easy to distinguish what he's saying in between the notes, and I do have to credit, as much as it hurts me to do so, Paul Stanley, in saying that what's going to sound best in a giant arena?
Yeah.
It's going to be the songs like Pour Some Sugar on Me or Crazy Nights, etc., that have those spaces between the parts that you could really get the audience into. And after that show, Kip came out into the audience, and he obviously was a club show, and he was taking pictures of people and signing things, and he was so freaking polite. He actually stopped some people that were trying to butt in and said, oh, I think these guys are next to take their picture with me. And I'm two guys, you know, like,
yeah.
Kip Winger says, like, he's fighting for two guys, me and my buddy, to put his arms around me and take a picture with and like, recognize who's next in line. Like, give me a break. This guy's freaking polite and talented. Anyway, so I have a really cool picture with him, and he was stand-up guy, obviously. So
nice.
I love me some Kip Winger.
All right, man. Number five.
Yeah, okay. Number five. Here's a band that's come up on the 91 and it's Harum Scarum.
Yeah.
In Mood Swings. Yeah, so Harum Scarum's a Canadian band, like I talked about earlier, and they are just epic musicians. Started in the late 80s and... got their first major album out in 91, but this is their obviously 93 album. Almost every song on this album could have been a single. Harry Hess is the singer, and if you want to hear range, this is the guy. He goes from low to high like no other, and it's a song called If There Was a Time. And he just goes to the stratospheric level of high, but he can sure sing low. It's a really cool mid-tempo song. But this is the band, yeah, so we talked about it in 91 when their drummer has a fantastic voice as well. He sings lead on the song called Sentimental Boulevard on this album, and he's the guy that went on to sing for Jake E. Lee's Red Dragon Cartel. Mm. So a few other standouts for me, at least, are No Justice, super powerful song, Stranger Than Love, and a song called Jealousy. It's kind of a... twangy mid-tempo song, but obviously their choruses are all humongous. So they're still at it today, still very talented. I believe they re-recorded this album, and it wasn't that long ago. It definitely wasn't 90s. It was sometime in the 2000s, and they put it out, and they still got it, man. So
nice.
This is one of those, not foreign, you know, they're North America still, but like there's a band called Goddard, and there's a band called Thunder that are both like huge in Europe area, but not big in America. This is kind of like the same thing with Harum Scarum, where big in Canada, I think fairly popular in Japan, super talented, still at it. So they've made a long career, and there's a reason for it. So I highly suggest this album.
Nice. I remember Harum Scarum coming up on one of the other podcasts. They're 91, but I definitely never heard their 93 offering, so I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, I'd say it's stronger. I mean, yeah. I know 91 had a lot of like more 80s-ish pop hits. This is a little bit more ballsy, and it's got more lower end on it. But, dude, like, I'm telling you, there's about two songs on the album that maybe couldn't be hits. The rest of them are huge songs. So give it a shot.
Nice, man. All right, number five. I feel like I got a lot of heavy hitters. I feel like this was the same with 92, but I got Dio, Strange Highways, and this is
All right. This
is probably going to piss Dio people off, but this is my favorite Dio album. I don't care. I love this album, man.
Wow, really? Oh, my God.
I love it. I love Tracy G's playing. I got to talk to him on the podcast before, and he was a really cool guy. A lot of cool stories about this era and the album that followed. And Jeff Powelson from Dokken is involved. He's the bass player on this album. And we got Vinny Appice on drums. So, you know, just great, great stuff. And if you ever want to see these guys in action, there is a live DVD from this tour. You can watch all of it on YouTube. But, man, there's a killer. They're all on fire. And, of course, Ronnie James Dio. I mean, it doesn't get any better with the vocals and his lyrics. The title track, Strange Highways, is a standout. It definitely kind of reminds you of, like, the song Heaven and Hell. You know, it seems kind of deep, you know, looking at life as, like, going on this strange highway, which makes a lot of sense. But I think as you get going, you know, once again, this is no different than what we talked about with Kiss Revenge and the Scorps and all that kind of stuff. You definitely feel like he's deliberately trying to heavy it up a bit. Not that Dio isn't always heavy, but this is heavier than something like Sacred Heart or something like that. You know what I mean? And I think the album, I actually like it as it progresses. A lot of times I feel like they always put the strongest stuff at the beginning and then it kind of gets a little bit weaker. But I love the whole album. I can listen to the whole thing. But my favorites are like Blood from a Stone, One Foot in the Grave, Bring Down the Rain, Here's to You. Here's to You is really cool. It's pretty fast, you know what I mean? And I mean, Dio's always been known for doing some fast ones, especially on his first couple. But I love this album. Yeah. His voice, he's we talked about this when I talked with Tracy G. You know, he could tell he was really trying to lay it on with like a menacing voice. He sounds a little bit nastier than usual. The riffs are, you know, it's tuned down to D, I think, or maybe even lower than D. You know, and there's a lot. Tracy G does a lot of crazy sound effects. Some Dio fans didn't like that, but I love it, man. I think it's his best.
So this one made my honorable mention. I almost had it up there, like number 9 or 10 or something. Mm-hmm. I listened to your Tracy G interview. Was there something about like guitar solos? Was he talking about
he had free reign on this album, and then basically he was told the next album where this at this point grunge was in full swing, and he was told that there wasn't going to be hardly any guitar solos on Angry Machines because, you know, that's not in anymore. And then I think at the end the piece that got a lot of notice from this interview was, he basically was told that he could be rhythm and Craig Goldie was going to come back in. And he was like, oh, hell no. And he goes, there's no way I'm
telling you. That's
you know? And then it was funny. Then, you know, for those who don't know this, Craig Goldie jumped into the comments of that video and said, that's not the way it was. You know, we would have been together. He wouldn't have been, you know, second fiddle. And Craig Goldie was really courteous about it. He was like, I would have loved to play with that guy. You know what I mean? So where Tracy G was kind of like, oh, Craig Goldie, yeah, right. Craig Goldie was like, dude, yeah. I love Tracy G. I think we would have been great together. So if you ever go down the wormhole of the 80s glam model cast, check out the interview with Craig Goldie. Check out the interview with Tracy G. And there's just a mini clip where Tracy G talks about the that getting demoted stuff. So, yeah. So that you're right. That this topic around this era has come up on the podcast.
Yeah. And I think maybe another reason why I didn't have it, and I really toyed with it, to be honest, very important to me, by the way, I had it in my honorable mention, was it is a little darker and scarier and heavier. And yeah, Dio was like that. His voice can be that medieval, pissed off, deep, angry. But for me, the not poppy, obviously, because he's never poppy, but a little bit more catchiness, even of like a We Rock or a Sacred Heart album is like kind of where I gravitate towards. And then they kind of brought it back a little bit with the latter albums, you know, even from like Magicka on.
Uh-huh.
But I always attribute that to my boy Simon Wright from AC/DC coming back in at Magic right. at Bay. So I gotta throw that in there.
I think those are the ones that I think Sammy Hagar helped out on those albums, I think. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, Jesus. Awesome. Yeah, that's like oil and water. Right on. Well, good pick.
I don't even know what's going on. I think I'm so lost. I even went down a wormhole in my own mind on this one. Okay, I think we're at number four. So what do you got for four?
All right, number four, I got Def Leppard, Retroactive.
All right,
so
okay.
This is one of those that, some call it, some used to kind of shit on it and call it a placeholder or whatever, but, they're coming fresh off of the Adrenalize album. Steve Clark passed away, but then they put out this kind of retrospective of their B-sides and some of the songs they recorded for other people and other artists, but you got a couple songs here, Desert Song, Fractured Love. Those are kind of cutting room floor songs, but one song I wanted to kind of highlight is a song called I Want to Be Your Hero. And that was a B-side off of Hysteria. And it's like, really? Like, this is a B-side? This song didn't make the album because there was too many strong songs on Hysteria? Like, this song, I Want to Be Your Hero, could be any other band's crown jewel. Like, it's that big and catchy and perfect. And Def Leppard said, nah, it's not quite good enough for Hysteria. We already have 8 singles, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they maybe were going to save this one. And they saved it for this album. It came out and it was probably slightly ignored. But there's also a song called She's Too Tough. And that was written for Helix. But this song is in my Def Leppard top 5 songs of all time. It's got that. So Joe Elliott can kind of get up to this intensity, and he does it on the second side of Hysteria, where he can just live there. And Elliott's voice it's up in this stratospheric range, and it just stays there. And he doesn't have to move; it doesn't budge. It's perfect. So like I said, it's post Steve Clark death, and really the end of that '80s era Def Leppard. And to me, it almost fits in as like one of my favorite Def Leppard albums, but it's not truly a studio album. It's not a best of either. It's just more of the kind of B-side stuff. But at that time, they were still so big they could do that. And it worked out well because these are all very finished songs. Uh-huh. So they recorded a few for other bands. They redid and either omitted acoustic or electric on this album. So anyway, this is one of those songs that or albums that came out in 93, and Def Leppard was so big that still was kind of big, but not as big as it could be in like 90 or 91.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember this coming out, but once again, never been huge into Leppard, so this was one I didn't need in my collection, so I don't know much about this one.
No worries.
So number four, man. I got to go with my boys Poison, Native Tongue. I think a lot of people forget this album came out in 93, or there's some people that might want to just forget about this album entirely. But I'll be honest, I didn't get it when it came out. I remember hearing right. Stand, and I was thinking like, whoa, what are we doing now? We're doing gospel metal? What is this? I didn't know what was going on when they had all the singers and their stuff. So I kind of stayed away, and I, like I said, I was kind of going down some different paths of different music that I was getting into at that point. So I didn't really need this album in the collection. And then what happened was with all these albums, a lot of these, like especially Native Tongue and Vince Neil Exposed, they made too many of them. They didn't sell. So you could go to like a cheapy rack, or I used to call it the cheapy racks, and you could buy this thing for $1.99 on cassette or something like that. So that's what I did probably about a year after it came out. And I remember listening to it and thinking like, no, don't like this album, And for some reason, it took years. I don't even know when it finally kicked in with this album. And I don't know why I kept trying to push myself to like this album. But it did happen. And this album has grown on me over the years. And I feel like it just gets better, you know, over time. You know, you kind of have a different perspective as maybe the older you get when you listen to it and you look at it. And if you think about it, if you think about Look What the Cat Dragged In to Flesh and Blood, there's a lot of change musically, right? They're definitely evolving. They've, even as early as Open Up and Say Ah, they're integrating some bluesier stuff in there. And I do think that if you go from Flesh and Blood to this, it is pretty much just like a natural progression. If you think about it, you know, what they were doing on there, this is would make the right step. You know, they're basically doing bluesy metal. And I think the catchiness is all still there. You know, when you listen to songs like Stay Alive, Body Talk, 7 Days, man, that's catchy as hell. I love how it starts off with the chorus. Blind Faith, right? Child Ride. There's just so many cool songs, but they're kind of deeper. You got to go deeper on this album to kind of hear all these songs. And one song I got to give credit to, man, it's got one of their coolest hooks. It's Fire and Ice, Until You Suffer Some. That chorus, yeah. The pre-chorus into the chorus, it's so good, man. And it, like, I love that song, and that's such an underrated tune. But, you know, well, let's address, you know, we had a lineup change. CeCe DeVille is out. Richie Kotzen is in. I, you know, for what they were doing, for what they were up against with the times, I like it, man. He brought a new dimension. He's a great guitar player. He's a great singer. I think people say that this is like his solo album that Poison basically recorded or something. I don't know if that's true or not, but you could tell he was playing a big role in what was going on. But like I said, I think they were leaning this way anyways. And the only thing I got to say, though, and I don't know why this has been stuck in my head, probably because I was just thinking about it. There's this one line in, I think it's in Stay Alive. It goes, get it, got it, better get it now. And I always thought that could be in a commercial. I always thought that sounded so cheesy. It sounded like, you know, we got fresh steaks at the Texas Roadhouse. Get it, got it, better get it now. So there's some goofy stuff on there. But overall, man, I like it. And I'm curious to see if you actually, what you think of this album. So what do you think of this album?
Well, so this album is not in the category of Motley 94, but it's close for me. I've tried and tried and tried, and there are a few songs that I like, and I actually do like the song Stand. And but to me, it's kind of like when Van Halen brought Sammy in, and they're like, oh my God, we have this other element of this vocal range. We could really utilize this. And you could hear that like a mofo on with Richie Kotzen's voice, because dude's got a fantastic singing voice, to the point where I bet Brett was like either, uh-oh, or, oh, this is killer. Like, this is killer. Like, I can really sit back and let him take over the background a little bit more. But I believe you had discussed it on an interview, or you kind of, I don't know, I heard you discuss it before.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, I'm going to give it another shot. And it was within this year. And I like it. It's just, I don't know, man. I'm such a believer in Poison being Poison.
Yeah.
And this was a natural progression. I totally agree, because they did start with the bluesier stuff on Flesh and Blood. But it was still kind of catchy blues rock stuff. You know, even songs like Ball and Chain on that album were kind of going down that alley, but you still had that, like, really catchiness. This album doesn't jump out to me. Trust me, I've tried. Mm-hmm. I've listened. I've wanted to really get into this and crack a smile. But I can't. There are another band with a big three, pretty much, for me. So I'm close with this one, and maybe someday I'll get there with my more mature ear. But right now, I'm still on the outside looking in a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think the problem with me sometimes is, okay, I want to just throw this out there. There's two singers that really I enjoyed back when I first got into music, and it's Vince Neil and Bret Michaels. Those are guys that I always tried to copy, and I thought they were cool. And I think I'm a sucker for these guys. Like, a lot of times, like, they could put out like a piece of shit album, and I probably will like it. And it's the same. Kiss is no different. You know, there's some shit Kiss stuff that I'm like, I like that. You know what I mean? But everybody else is like, no, man, it sucks. I don't. But it's Kiss. I like it. You know. And I think that's how I can be sometimes with Vince Neil and Bret Michaels. I think Hollyweird sucks. Like, I don't care. I don't care how much I like Bret Michaels. I still think Hollyweird sucks. And I think most of his solo albums from what I can tell, suck. I hate to say that, but even like Vince Neil, like I like Carved in Stone, and everybody hates that. You know what I mean? I think Vince probably hates it, but you know, because it has his voice on it, I like it, and that's just the way true. I am. You know?
Well, I think with that, it's they're both guys that you look at and you go, oh, you know, they got it just in their look alone, and then you listen to them, and you go, God. That ain't too tough to do. It's very unique.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's very unique, and that's the thing with Vince and Brett. They both have that animal magnetism that oh my God, these guys really have it when it comes to their look, and then they have it because of their voice a little bit. But you could almost like emulate it or try to be that a little bit, and you might even achieve that. So that might be the draw to these guys, but they absolutely had their niche, and it obviously worked really well for them.
Yo, sure. Well, we're getting to the top three, man. This is the big stuff. What do you got, number three?
Funny you should mention it. Vince Neil exposed. So, you know, while Motley was doing, was effing around with whatever you want to call Motley 94, Vince was busy being a true 80s ripper on this album. So, you know,
he made Dr. Feel Good Part 2, or at least in his own mind he did, right?
That's exactly it. So, you know, you got him teaming up with Steve Stevens and a number of other rippers from that era. And they came out with a great hard rock album. I mean, you got songs like Sister of Pain. You got You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come, which is one of those rare hits I really never get sick of. Like, mm-hmm. if you really want to get pumped up, like, that's the song for me. So, I love that song. I love the video. And I love the video version. I'm not sure if you've ever...
It's different.
I'm sure you have, but a lot of people probably... I haven't realized this, but I'm probably sure you have. But you know, in the video version, they stop all the instrumentation after the solo for that one huge chorus.
Yeah.
But then on the album, they play through, which kind of bummed me out because I really liked it when they stop and they do the huge whoa, and then they do the You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come. And it works so well. It's one of those times when, you do want to stop the instrumentation and listen to that. So, kind of bummed they didn't do it on the actual album, but the video is killer nonetheless. And then there's Fine, Fine Wine. That's one of those songs that has such a killer bass line hard rock. It's just got one of those bass line hard rock intros that it's just, you can tell it's going to be a sexy one. I like it a lot. So, that's one of those songs, but there are a couple that I'm not too stoked on, and that is Can't Change Me and Getting Hard. Those are not my favorites. Those are not my favorites on the album, but whatever. So I do dig the ballad Forever.
It is.
I will admit that it's 1,000 times better than Time for Change off of Dr. Mm-hmm. Feelgood. And as a side note, had Dr. Feelgood had a big ballad, it would have made that album even bigger. Mm-hmm. Bigger than it was. Bigger than the 6 million seller it was. So this is my number three, and obviously I'm pretty into it.
So I could probably talk all night about Vince Neil Exposed. It was another one of those where like kind of passed on it in the beginning, and then got it, and then actually immediately realized that it was a foolish move not to get it right when it came out because I loved it. You know what I mean? And and what I gotta say, man, and you touched on at least one track. I kind of forgot about Getting Hard. I try to forget about that song for a lot of different reasons. Maybe the title, just in general. But but I think it's some of Vince's cheesiest stuff. And I think it's some of his best. And that's what's kind of weird about that album, because I can look at like almost song for song, like these, like Sister of Pain and Have Your Cake and Eat It Too. Like these are some of the most cliche, goofiest lyrics and songs that you could ever have. But then just the stuff like Look in Her Eyes and The Edge.
Yeah.
And Living is a Luxury is my favorite song on the album. I love that song.
Oh, nice.
And it's just, I don't know, man. The album is kind of hard to comprehend because of that, and especially the song, the Sweet cover, Set Me Free. It's so heavy and jamming, you know? So, and Steve Stevens, man, he makes this album because his guitar work is just insane. You know, between the shredding, the laser sounds, the Spanish classical guitar. I mean, he's going places. Like, he's going friggin' mental on this album, man. And Vince, once again, I always wanted to know what Vince's musical vision was, because we know Motley Crue is Nikki Sixx's musical vision. Now, Vince has credits on this album, but I think there probably some people would argue that, like, Jack Blades and Tommy Shaw and all these different guys, you know, wrote a lot of these songs for him. I don't know, you know what I mean? But it's good. And, you know, I like Can't Change Me. I dig all that, like, classical guitar in it. I think that's pretty cool. And I do like Forever as well. But, yeah, man, you know, Vince came out of the gate first. With an album, and he definitely was true to what he was about, you know what I mean? And he can be proud because this album has aged well, like fine, fine wine. So,
oh, killer. Look at you. I like that. You know what, though? I think Vince doesn't know how to be anything else but this. Like,
yes,
look at him trying to adapt into the, like, end of the 90s and early, well, where he is now. Like, I don't think he knows any different, which makes him that much more killer to me, dude. Like, Vince is my number one when it comes to this whole thing. So, just like you know, like, you're going to be a Vince fan forever. But how about the other thing? You ever notice that the kind of one of the weird visual themes on this whole solo era thing was he didn't ever wear shoes. You ever notice that? Like in the videos where you invite a bunch of friends to come, as well as the MTV, they did the MTV Awards ceremony when they came out with this album, and he was super pumped because he beat Motley to the punch.
Yep.
And he beat him with something that was really freaking killer, being You Invite a Bunch of Friends Can't Come.
Yep.
It was on a soundtrack of a decently successful movie, and he got to come out and have a ripping band with a bunch of good-looking dudes and famous dudes, and play that song and do well, and wore no shoes, which is fine.
Yeah, because I think at that performance he had Phil Suzanne on bass, and but I think he was out after, and then it was Robbie Crane, and then Vicky Fox was on drums. You know, so he had some heavy hitters in there, man. And I forgot to say, of course, I didn't say this, but it should go without saying, his voice sounds killer on this album. So.
Yes, exactly. He does a little bit more of that, like, kind of hoarse primal scream voice on this album, more so than, let's say, like a Raise Your Hands to Rock squeaky bin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep, he's
which
got
is fine,
balls.
Which
yep.
is fine, yeah. But, hey, that's why we're such big fans. We can tell the difference.
That's right, man. Well, what do we got? I'm dying to hear number two. What's number two?
Well, that was my number three. Have you done your number three?
Oh, that was my number three. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mention that. That's why I went so deep into detail. That was my number three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we're ready
for
two.
Okay, cool.
We're ready for two.
All right. Number two. So I was wondering, I was like, God, you have to have it on your list. Number three, remember?
It could have been number one if it wasn't for some of those goofy songs. If it was a little bit more consistent, it probably could have been number one.
All right, cool. All right, well, my number two, Danger, Danger, Cockroach, the Ted Poley version, okay? I gotta preface it by saying, first off, I confirmed on their own damn official website that this was recorded in 1993. Okay, it was released finally in 2001.
Okay.
But it was recorded in 93. So the Paul Lane version was recorded in 94. So maybe if we ever do 94, I'll throw that one in there. But
produced by Sammy Hagar.
Yes, exactly. Of course. Yeah, there's got to be a Sammy.
There's got to be a Sammy reference on it.
So maybe even some ACDC Live album microphone. Anyway.
ACDC Live, yeah.
So this is a strange one. So, you know, they switched singers after Poley recorded the album, and then they re-recorded it with Paul Lane. And this is legitimately one of those Brian Johnson, Bon Scott, Sammy Hagar, David Lee Roth things for me, where I really, really like both singers a lot.
Uh-huh.
Paul Lane had a great solo record, and his stuff with Danger Danger is just killer. Like, I really like this dude's voice. I think Paul Lane's voice actually fits the songs on Cockroach better than Pulley.
Yeah.
For this album specifically. But on the flip side, I couldn't see Paul Lane or anyone else really doing what Pulley did on the first two Danger Danger albums.
No.
So, you know, it's a really, it's a healthy trade-off, and it's of the era. So, but I mean, dude, you got songs like Good Time, Going, Going, Gone, When She's Good, Shot of Love, and then, you know, I rarely mention ballads, but everybody's got a sweet spot, of course. But this one, ballad called Afraid of Love, is, it's legit in my top five of ballads of all time. If you haven't heard it, dude, it's killer. It kind of gets into the mid-tempo classification, but it's still a ballad, you know, especially because of the title. But, dude, it's so good. But, this, yeah, this album stands right up next to the first two. Like, I don't even know where I'm at in terms of my ranking of the first three Danger Danger albums, but I might put Screw It first. But
get the hell out of here.
Close. I know.
Ain't
dude.
No business like monkey business.
Oh, come on.
I mean, it's a commercial. That get that one with the Stay Alive from a Native Tongue and a Monkey Business. You got some good jingles right there.
I know, but, dude, think about how deep they go on Screw It with Slipped of a Big World. I mean, what's that song about?
Wow. Yeah, they're anyway. Deep on that one, yeah.
you could take deep literally or figuratively.
Yes,
anyway,
exactly.
But besides that, so I don't know. This album's so good, man. I had a friend back in the early 2000s that used to preach this. I had never heard at that point. And he's like, "Man, have you ever heard Cockroach?" Though I'm like, "Cockroach sounds like some dumb 2001 90s album."
Yeah.
But dude, like, Going, Going, Gone, like Shot of Love, like these guys wrote very catchy songs. They knew what they were doing. Oh, like Jeff Parris, man. They knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's why it's my number two, even ahead of a huge act like Vince Neil.
You know, this one, I never even really knew about it until like a few years ago. Somebody on Twitter tagged me on it and said, "Man, you got to listen to this Cockroach." And I'm like, "What the hell is this?" So I popped it on and I was like, "Whoa, this is good." And I think at that point I listened to both. I listened to the Paul Lane, which I think it sounded killer. I mean, I wasn't super familiar with Paul Lane. I remember he was the replacement guy in Danger Danger, but you know, that sounded really cool. The Ted Poley one sounded cool. There's just something about he's another one of those ones. Like, even as much as I'm not like a Danger Danger freak, I love Ted Poley's voice, you know what I mean? And it definitely works for me. So the only reason I couldn't put Cockroach on a list for me is I just haven't had enough time to I haven't lived with it like I have with some of these other albums, but I do respect it. I think it's super cool, and I'm going to definitely check it out more. But yeah, that's just why I couldn't put it on, but it is great.
Yeah, I'd give it a healthy shot. There's about half the songs on there that are they're definitely hinting towards getting a little too hard for Danger Danger, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They're already tending that direction. But then there's half the songs, like the probably all the ones I mentioned, obviously, that are just like melodic rock perfection. And I have a feeling that Bruno Ravel is the main songwriter, and he's the bass player. He's kind of the Nikki Six of the band.
Yep.
He writes a hell of a song. So I bet you those were songs that he had cooking from the 80s-ish era, early 90s era, and had to throw them on here because they were just too damn good.
Mm-hmm. So, dude, it got really tough for me. It was a toss-up between one and two. I was like, man, that was two of my favorite albums of all time, and I didn't know what to do, and eventually just had to make a decision. Number two, man, I got Lillian Axe, Psycho Schizophrenia. It is my favorite Lillian Axe album. I think I can just listen to the whole way through. It's just I listen to every song, and it all, the whole thing just fits together so well. I think it's a perfect mix of, like, it still has that 80s sensibility, but it's moving forward into, like, what music could be. And it's definitely not following any trends. It's not trying to be grunge. It's not trying to be heavy. Although it is heavy, it's just, you could tell, it's Stevie Blaze was in the zone. You know, he wrote this album all on his own, the lyrics, the music, and he had a really specific vision, and he executed it perfectly. And especially when you got somebody as awesome as Ron Taylor singing on it, of course it's going to be good.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, Crucified, Deep Freeze, Moonlight in Your Blood, Now You Know, and I'm telling you, there's a tearjerker on here, man. The Day That I Met You, I always hope that someday somebody will redo this song, like a modern pop artist or somebody. It's just an acoustic and a vocal, and Ron Taylor's voice is just so good, and it's pretty emotional, man. It's pretty cool. And it ends with the kick-ass heavy title track. I'm bummed that it's not number one, but I'm super happy about what is number one. So that is my number two.
All right. So a little history with me here is I bought Poetic Justice first because that's what I found first.
Yep.
The first two albums I could not find anywhere. And mind you, this is the days before streaming or internet stuff where I could just click and listen. So Poetic Justice and I get along really well. I found this album, I put it on, and it may have sounded a little bit too 90s for me, and I never listened to it again.
Oh, that's hanging up.
I know, dude. So is there any connection to Fields of Yesterday with this album, or is that just older songs they re-released?
Fields of Yesterday are songs that they were cooking up between, I believe, not all of them, but the majority of them are between Love and War and Poetic Justice. They didn't make the album. But I think
that's a hell of an album.
It's a hell of an album. I actually just listened to it. I listened to it last night. I don't know why. But
because
you go along, there are tracks that they were kind of kicking around in the more modern era. But the first few, I believe, are because I asked him about that, and I thought that's what he said, but or maybe that's in the liner notes. But yeah, that's the era those are from.
As a comparison with like a Death Valley Days or anything, compared to anything on Psych of Schizophrenia, or am I off in that?
Is it comparable?
Yeah.
No.
Or like For Crying Out Loud or anything like that?
No. Psycho Schizophrenia is nothing like anything on Fields of, in my opinion. Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to check it out. And actually, obviously, in doing research for 93, that album came out, and I thought, I'm gonna give it a better look from here on out. So
yeah,
I had a feeling it would be up there in your top 10, and now I realize, why it's probably such a great album. So I'm always down for more Ron Taylor Lillian. So.
Yeah.
Again, I'm gonna have to really check it out.
I'll send you some key tracks you need to hear.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
All right, man. What's number one? I have no clue. The suspense is killing me. What's number one?
All right, dude. Number one for me is the Scorpions, Face the Heat.
Oh, Face the Heat. That's right. Okay. I forgot it has not reappeared since I talked about it. Awesome, man. What are your thoughts on Face the Heat?
Oh, man, this one means a lot to me. So this is the end of my Scorpions era. So my go-to Scorpions era is 82 to 93, man. We got Blackout to Face the Heat. Like, it doesn't get much better of an era of albums than those for me. Like, every album in from 82 to 93 was just, dude, you could listen to it through and through. But I got into the Scorpions around this album's release about 94, 95, and I was really getting into other stuff because I had not tapped out on my AC/DC, but I had fulfilled all my AC/DC love at that point because they had not released a new album. So I started poking around who sounds like AC/DC, who's in the genre, and the Scorpions were obviously one of the first big bands along with Crocus and YNT and those guys. So, 95, I bought this album, and I was like, oh my god, like, I've heard the Scorpions, obviously, everybody knows the bigger hits, but, dude, this is an album that I played through and through probably more than any other Scorpions album I own, even Savage Amusement or Love It for Sting or anything like that. So I spun this thing over and over and over. And to this day, I'm probably more familiar with this album than any other Scorpions album out there, which is crazy. But I just love, like, the aggression of this album, but it's still keeping that signature Scorpion sound and the big, giant hooks. So, yeah, this is the last time they feature Herman Lobo, and they brought in that new bass player, like you said.
Yep.
But you got songs like Someone to Touch and Hate to Be Nice and Nightmare Avenue. And you got Alien Nation with that huge guitar intro. You got No Pain. Exactly. You got that. You got No Pain, No Gain with almost an even bigger guitar and drum sound. Like, their bottom end was just big, big on this album. Maybe it was the inclusion of that new bass player, but it was just killer. So, other things, like, this is just the most killer Scorpions image album cover. I mean, like, yeah, you can't really beat Love It for Sting's album cover, obviously, or Blackout.
Right.
But this album cover was cool. It was kind of the end of that era. Their look was cool, and their comfort level in not doing, like, the Savage Amusement label pressure look with the neons and the pinks and the late 80s stuff. It's just that harder, crazy world version of the Scorpions. So, anyway, this is why it's my number one. And also, I'm not sure if everybody knows, but there is that hidden track at the very end. If you let Lonely Nights, I think it's Lonely Nights is the last song. If you let it play, I believe they do an Elvis cover.
Yeah, I remember
at the end of the album. So, yeah. So, it's cool to hear Klaus doing anything pretty much. But, dude, you know, this is just one of those. Never gets old for me. Good look, good sound, big sound, and it really is kind of the end of the era for me for my love for the Scorpions. I mean, I dig their albums after that, but this is the last big 80s Scorpions sound. Yep. So yeah, that's why it's my number one, dude. It's huge for me.
Yeah, it's great. And you know what, man? You know, one album that you didn't mention in your run of albums, go back sometime and give some love to Love Drive. I listened to Love Drive the other day, and
totally.
It was blowing me away, man. I think as soon as they got the Polygram, they kick ass. So I love Love Drive, and I love Animal Magnetism. So that's why I usually go Love Drive to Savage Amusement, because for me, Crazy World is kind of weak. But this is, I like this better than Crazy World, in my opinion. So
you like Face the Heat better than Crazy World?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, there's some killer shit on Crazy World, like Tease Me, Please Me, obviously, is the single. But like Kicks After Six, Hit Between the Eyes, those are good. And then you got a really, really kind of relaxed, sentimental ballad in Send Me an Angel.
Yeah.
But Love Drive, no, dude, I dig Love Drive. It's a 70s album. It's 79. But, yep. Yeah, Loving You Sunday Morning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and the song Love Drive, of course. They have Holiday on there. And they made those songs for me in regards to, like, when I discovered Love Drive on Worldwide Live.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Loving You Sunday Morning is... Yeah, dude, like, Loving You Sunday Morning is one of those songs where not many other bands could pull it off live, dude. Like, the fact that Klaus can do that song live and make it sound so perfect, trust me, like, I don't know actually why I didn't say, like, a 79 to 93 era of Scorps, but I think I chose Blackout just because they got a little bit more 80s-ish sounding hard on that album.
Yeah.
Even though 79, it's pretty much when they started it all with The Zoo and Make It Real and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, the Scorpions are just, dude, they're like the endless band when it comes to, like, discovery. It's a little bit like Judas Priest or AC/DC, where you just go, dude, here's yet another album, like, and we're going to go back to the Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap or the British Steel or whatever, where you're like, dude, it's just so consistent all the time if you want to go back to that stuff. But then you bump it up to the early 90s and they're still kicking ass and kind of making it their time. So, yeah, anyway, that's my number one.
And my number one is your number 10, man. Savatage beats them all out, and I just love this album. I'm a huge Savatage nut. And,
nice, dude.
Luckily, I've already talked a little bit about this, so I can probably keep it. I can cut down some of my comments. I can cut down on the book here, my essay that I wrote. But anyways, actually, the cool thing was I saw him on this tour, and I probably got see Chris Oliva a few months before he passed away. And this, the anniversary of his death was just a couple days ago, I think. And I put it out on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And somebody had said, I think it was Andy on Twitter, that he said that he was Chris Oliva was on the way to a festival show, and Andy was actually at the concert, and all the news was going out throughout the crowd, people talking about it. Oh, something happened. There was an accident. Oh, Chris Oliva died. So I didn't realize that he was on the way to a show. So just funny, all these years I didn't know that, but that had to have really sucked on a lot of levels, you know, and it was a tragic loss. But he's still around for this album. So let's talk about, you know, the great music that he made with his brother and Paul O'Neill. I think in 90, I did a podcast where I talk about albums that let me down. And one album that let me down was Streets, because I really loved Gutter Ballet. And then Streets was like, I wanted to love it. For some reason, I just didn't. And then when we get to this album, there's a lot of concern, right? We got a vocalist change. Wasn't really impressed with the album before it. What's going to happen? But to me, they totally redeemed themselves. Picked up right where they left off from Gutter Ballet. A lot of epic stuff. Like you said, there's times where the piano's in there. It's just such well-written songs. And the heavy stuff is heavy and kick-ass. Carves of Stone, Lights Out. Then you've got like the power ballady type stuff like Follow Me. And the thing I love about Follow Me is that there's this one part where it just breaks down, and his voice follows like a riff. Man only sees what he wants to see, living in a world that is straight from reality. I mean, it's so weird, you know what I mean? Like, nobody does that, you know? So it was really creative. All That I Bleed is such a crazy power ballad. You know what I mean? It's all really soft and talking about this love letter about somebody, you know, breaking your heart. And then you get to the chorus, jin, jin, jin. You know, it's wicked crunchy. I think this is their best songs they wrote together. And one song that gets me choked up all the time, and I don't know why, is Sleep, man. I'm telling you, when I die, I want Sleep played at my funeral. There's something about that song. It's just so, it's just acoustic, and the vocals with his voice. And I know he didn't write that song, but man, it's so cool. So just, I let that album speak for itself. You know, listen to the music. Doesn't matter what I say about it, what you say about it, what the members said about it. I've talked to, like I said, a lot of them. Just listen to that album. You can listen to it all the way through. There ain't a bad song on it. It's just a masterpiece. It belongs at number one. And me just verbalizing everything I did makes me realize that was the right choice. It's got great production. It's just a winner, man. Zach Stevens. I was introduced to Zach Stevens and immediately fell in love with that voice, and he's still rocking today. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we get another Savatage album.
Absolutely. Dude, I listened to all your interviews with those guys, and this album is one of those where it grows on you over and over.
Yep.
And it's pretty cool that you being a, you know, Queen fan and this and that, you get a metal Queen. You know, that's what this band kind of became. And, you know, Hall of the Mountain King and their albums before that, compared to this one, they really matured.
They did.
And I really like the fact that, and I know you guys had discussed it, but people came in and they tried to emulate the albums prior.
Yeah.
And then Zach Stevens came in and he just kicked ass in his own way.
Yep.
And the guy has such a cool voice, the way he can, he's a little bit like, you know, Harry has from the band, Harum Scarum.
Mm-hmm.
He could go very low. Like, I wonder if his speaking voice is real low, but he goes very low and really high. Zach Stevens, it doesn't sound like he's going to have that much range. And then all of a sudden he'll just bust out.
Yeah, and you're
like,
real high.
Dude, this guy's got such an impressive range.
Yep.
So cool. And he fits the band so well. And they needed that for the style they were going through at the time.
Yep.
This is one of those growers where you can listen to it over and over and probably find something new and exciting every time you listen to it. So I was thinking it would be your number one, and I'm sure glad it was, because I certainly appreciate the passion you have for this band and this album especially. So
I'm gonna
delve into it harder and harder, because this is one of those albums that, like, I've had for years, and I've listened to it over and over for years, but obviously not as close as you have, but I'm gonna from now on. It's a really cool one.
Nice, man. Well, what do you got for some quick what do we call them, honorable mentions? Because I had a few, man.
Oh, yeah. Dude,
I had a few that got kicked off, and I was like, damn, I really wanted to put – there's two that I really wanted to – maybe even three that I wanted in there, but they had to go. But what do you got?
Dude, you know what? Did you want to put Arcade in there?
Arcade never registered with me. I don't know. I don't know why.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
And that's the thing is – so I have Arcade in there, but the reason why, you know – dude, I have a rat tattoo on my back. Mm-hmm. I have the R from the Reach for the Sky album and Detonator on my back. And, of course, my initials are under it because my initials are RBK.
Yep.
So it kind of worked out. But, I mean, I freaking love Rat and I love Piercy. But this album, it sounded like what would be like pre-EP Rat in terms of Piercy's production of his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't huge on it. I like the album, but it's not Rat to me. So I have Arcade.
Yeah.
I got Dio, Strange Highways. I got Coverdale Page. They kind of, on this album.
Shit.
I got Fight.
Shit, man. I forgot about Coverdale Page. I definitely would have had that on my list. Damn it.
Dude, I know.
Damn
it's
it.
Killer, but like, it was a little bit too much wannabe Zeppelin to me. I know it's gonna probably kind of piss people off, but like, I don't know, dude, I love David Coverdale, and I to me this kind of was like, okay, were you just pretending the whole time from 87 Slip of the Tongue in those two, like, were you pretending to be 80s guy but you're really rooted in your 70s Deep Purple roots, and then you finally got to go back to it with your Jimmy Page partnership? Like, that kind of screams in this album for me. So I was kind of like, I don't know, dude, you're not as 86 as I thought you were. But I mean, I still like it, but whatever. And then a band called Red Dawn, album called Never Say Surrender. It's very 80s. It's very like 80s AOR, but it's freaking killer. And then as kind of a joke is Last Action Hero soundtrack.
I got that in mind too.
On AC/DC.
It's so good.
You know that, dude?
Oh my god, it's so good.
Dude, it's killer. It's got Queensryche. It's got Megadeth. It's got Last Action. Tesla. It's got AC/DC. It's got Def Leppard. Dude, so I had it on there.
Yep.
That's it. And then I had Fight. So
okay,
that's my honorable mention.
Well, I am completely pissed that I don't have Coverdale Page on my life. Once again, now I don't know where it would have shaken out. I don't know where my shake my tree, right? I don't know where it would have shaken out.
Yeah, I was gonna say shake my tree.
I don't know, but I am bummed because I've been on some pretty hard benders with that album.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that album. The boys are feeling hot tonight. There's some cool songs on there, and Pride and Joy, Shake My Tree, It's Over Now. Damn, I like that album. But what is what it is. I'm sticking with my list. I'm proud of it. But yeah, Last Action Hero, man, The Real World, Queensryche. Oh, wow, what a song. Big, I even I like Big Gun. I ain't even an AC/DC fan. I like Big Gun, you know what I mean?
Angry Gun.
Oh, good. Even it was cool. You had like Alice in Chains, and it was like everybody was playing together in the sandbox nicely on that one. You know what I mean? You had some grunge and you had some metal, you know, it was nice. I wanted to put Aerosmith Get a Grip. I'm not much of an Aerosmith fan, but I always thought the song Eat the Rich was so cool, man. I always loved that. And Living on the Edge is cool. There's some cool songs on there. So I got to give Aerosmith a nod. I wanted to put Anthrax Sound of White Noise. I love Only and Potter's Field. There's just so many cool tracks. Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream. I know it's not metal, but it's got some great tracks, man. And that was an album senior year, man. I was enjoying it. And Typo Negative, Bloody Kisses. That is so – I mean, that album was so heavy, so weird. It's so good. But those are my honorables.
Well, those are good ones, man. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the fact that the Last Action Hero soundtrack for you and me was both on there is pretty awesome.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Can I just mention that AC/DC sure chose some shit movies to be their soundtracks, both in Maximum Overdrive and Last Action Hero. But they redeemed themselves with Iron Man with the soundtrack on that one.
Big time. Well, man, this was fun. We went deep into this one, so I'm glad. This was a great year, and people got to give this year some respect. This is good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of the end of some things, but
yep.
I love it. It ended up being a great year. I still think my 92 choice is my year, but you know what? This isn't far behind.
Awesome. All right, brother. Thanks as always. Have a good one.
Yeah, you got it, man. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you. Bye.
Well, that was a long-winded discussion about a great year. Hope you enjoyed it. Rock on!